All right, so here's what happened. I did a live stream, and unbeknownst to me, at the 56-minute mark, it froze up and cut off. I don't know what happened. I didn't realize it. I kept talking. I was being lively, entertaining, hitting the comments, grifting so hard, no one was able to see any of it. So my apologies if you attended the live stream and at 56 minutes it cut off. I had kept going, and I didn't realize it. Had I been looking at the chat, I would have known that. So going forward, first off, thank you, StreamYard, so much for doing that without notifying me on my end that it had cut off. But if I had been looking at the comments, I would have seen that. So I'm going to try it again. I'm going to try another live stream in July, and that time I'm going to check the comment stream every like 10 minutes to make sure it's still going. I wasn't looking at it because it gets in my head and it's hard to like present the information and read comments. So I say all that to say this. My apologies for that. And I am now going to record the part that you missed. If you already listened to the first 56 minutes, my advice would be to go ahead and fast forward 56 minutes from when I start the show, which is right now. If you want to know the future, you have to watch science fiction movies of the past, Minority Report, Ready Player One, Transcendence, The Matrix, V for Vendetta, and countless others. Science fiction inspires the nerds to use technology to create the world they think is cool, and unfortunately for us, that is the dystopian surveillance state called Freedom Cities, an inversion Orwellian term for doublethink that we're sliding into. Join me today on this special live episode for the sixth installment in the Dark Enlightenment series, where we unpack the Palantir surveillance state live on occult symbolism and pop culture. Now, I butcher the intro because we're live. And hell, even if we're not live, I just leave it in there. You know what? This isn't a polished professional performance here. Now, today we're going to talk about what Palantir is, their roots with the CIA, occult symbolism from Lord of the Rings, the software being used to implement the police state, the surveillance state, the national database plans to create and implement a Chinese social credit score system in America, why you should be shaking in your little booties. All right? I'm usually fear-mongering over Satan trying to steal your soul, but today I'm fear-mongering over Silicon Valley tech elite nerds, the Dark Enlightenment transhuman digital matrix plans. So today, first, I'm going to catch you up with everything going on behind the scenes with me, because it's all about me, okay, as usual. I'm going to give it a, you know, it's like a 10-minute warm-up sesh, let people get in the comment sections on the YouTubes and the Twitter X's. So then we're going to dive deep into Palantir. I've got some images, some slides, if you will. As you know, I am new to the live streaming technique, but I hope this is going to be a good time. I'm every time I make it a little bit more better, a little bit more polished. So today, let's start out with I'm gonna tease you a little more on the Palantir thing. Then we're gonna talk about what I'm working on behind the scenes, so you know what to expect from future episodes and so on and such. And I'm gonna read some comments throughout and so on. You know the drill. First, I want to read to you from Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma, where he talks about the mystery schools and how they were spread out and they are behind all of the power structures, much like the story about what happened when the Bavarian Illuminati was broken up, right? The whole idea was they were there for a few years. The German government, the religious structures, whatever they were, they didn't like it. They were like, shut it down. They shut it down, and most of them fled and went underground, kind of like the Knights Templar spreading the mystery religion schools throughout Europe. So let's read from Albert Pike. I'm channeling my inner Bill Cooper for this one, all right? After leaving Egypt, the mysteries were modified by the habits of the different nations among whom they were introduced, and especially by the religious systems of the countries into which they were transplanted. To maintain the established government, laws, and religion was the obligation of the initiate everywhere, And everywhere they were, the heritage of the priests, who were nowhere willing to make the common people co-proprietors with themselves of philosophical truth. Now, what we're talking about is the Platonic Empire, the Neoplatonist ideas, the New Atlantis, the secret destiny of America, right? All the plans, the CEO King, what I've been talking about for multiple episodes of Dark Enlightenment, and I'm not stopping now. I got lots more to go. You wouldn't believe it. In fact, I'm writing a whole book about it. Because this thing connects every bit of the whole agenda of occult symbolism. If you can believe that, it all comes from channeling entities. I know, sounds crazy. Wait till you read my book. We're going to break it down. Kenneth Gray, you know who I blame for all this? Aleister Crowley, Joseph Smith, John Dee. Magic nerds, that's who I blame. But the passage there from Albert Pike is referencing the idea that only those deemed worthy and initiated into the mystery religions are allowed to know the end game. The rest is merely spectacle. In fact, I am working on a King Kill 33 book club that's going to be on the supporter feeds. June and July's bonus content. We're going to deep dive into what could be the most important conspiracy document of all time. Could be the red pill daddy of all red pill daddies. All right. If you don't know who he is, we've all got some debts to pay towards Mr. James Shelby Downard. Kind of a wacky dude, but hey, he was talking about this stuff in the 70s. So, and he breaks it all down in the psychodramas of how we are basically led through all of this initiatory quasi-mystery religion symbolism, I guess, right? And what we're seeing, and what I'm going to talk about here in Dark Enlightenment 6 with Palantir, what we're seeing is the privatization and the empowerment of the deep state. Contractors performing the surveillance functions. In fact, I was watching Glenn Greenwald on Rumble, had a whole show about this. I'm about halfway through. And he did a pretty good rundown of how all this came to be. And it started out with Sheriff Harry S. Truman. That's right, Sheriff Harry S. Truman. Who got the Twin Peaks joke? Oh, God. Speaking of which, Twin Peaks is going to be all three seasons on June 13th on Mubi. So there's another chance for you to watch all of them and follow along on my patreon.com/IlluminatiWatcher. 55 episode Twin Peaks, Grey Lodge, Occult Symbolism Breakdown. You're going to need it. You're going to want it. But Greg Greenwald breaks it down. He basically lays it out. He says, it started out with Harry S. Truman, National Security Act 1947, establishes basically intelligence agencies. And of course, it's the same theme over and over. It's safety in exchange for privacy. Oh my God, we got it. Oh, the communists, they're coming to get you. Oh. So we got to spy on you. We got to make sure that they don't destroy the capitalist fantasies. Which, right or wrong, I'm not a communist, but, you know, I'm not a fool to think that they've got your best interest in mind. All right? So it started out with Truman, and then a few years later, President Eisenhower, when he's leaving office, he warned us. He's like, hey, there's like this deep state military industrial complex, and what he was referring to was the privatization, right? All your big contractors gaining more powers, and you see this with the UFO disclosure movement, right? You see how the story being released is that all the UFO technology is being held at these various contractor facilities. Meaning private companies have more access to these secrets of the universe than our own government. All right. Then 9/11, Patriot Act, took this even further. Then Glenn says they were trying to sabotage, the intel agencies were trying to sabotage Trump's first run for president in 2016. And that's true. I'm going to be fair and balanced with you guys. It's true. You know, they did all the suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop. He didn't bring up how James Comey dropped the October surprise, though, either, to be fair there. All right. So there was some weird intel interference on both sides of the aisle with that one. And I didn't like Hillary Clinton, by the way, for the record. Then I've always been independently, what do you call it, unaffiliated voter. I will go with whoever makes the most sense. Trump's new people that he's putting at the head of these agencies, you'll notice most of them are outsiders. They do not have much of a history inside these organizations. Because the promise, the idea that he run on is breaking up the deep state. And a lot of people believe this. A lot of people think that this is the way. And that actually kind of makes sense. I actually understand that. And I think that's not a terrible idea. However, if you look at what the deep state actually is, and you go back through the UFO disclosure movement, you go back through Eisenhower, you can see that part of that military-industrial complex deep state is the contractors, which is where Palantir shows up, okay? So we're going to come back to that. I'm going to go to the comments, then we're going to talk about what I got in the works for you guys for June and July, maybe even August, and then we're going to hit it. We're going to hit it hard, baby. Okay. Let me go back to the top here. All right, everyone's in here. Howley, what's up? What's up? Mississippi in the house. What's up, Craig? John Gilbert out in L.A. John, is it violence 24/7, or is what are you witnessing out there? I mean, I know Los Angeles is a pretty big city. I've seen some videos of the protest where they seemed very peaceful. I've seen couple videos where people were destroying property, which is not cool. I've seen a couple videos destroying property that turned out to be AI that looked real as all get out. Interesting situation going on over there. Delana, what up? What up? Texas? Okay, everyone's in here. Very good. Very good. Crocodile episode from Black Mirror. You know, I haven't seen all the... I've only seen a couple Black Mirrors. So, all right, here we go. Jamsy in the house. What up? Jethro, always a pleasure. Yeah, Hallie, thank you. Smash the like button. Like and subscribe. Share whatever the things you got to do with the YouTubes and the Twitters. Still learning. All right. Ryan's in here. What up, Ryan? First off, I'm nobody's red pill daddy, okay? I'm here with you guys learning from the best. All right. Okay, John Gilbert, is a good question. Are there any symbolic connection to the King Kill Club and the No Kings protest? I don't know. I got to look into that. I don't know. I know the No Kings protest is, what, Saturday the 14th. I've seen that the Walmart family billionaires are funding a lot of that, which is very odd, right? You could argue that Walmart has a financial interest in shutting down some of these tariffs because of all their Chinese products. Plus, they are also part of, what was this? I just seen some monies. What does the monies mean? Jamsy, what up, fool? Super sticker. Super sticker in the house. Thanks. So I don't know what to think about the Walmart thing. That's strange because Walmart is, their employees are some of the biggest, because Walmart doesn't pay them a fair wage and doesn't let them collectively unionize. Not to sound like a hardcore leftist, but the fact of the matter is they don't get paid enough. So now they're on government SNAP food stamps. And I'm very much capitalist in the sense that people need to be able to, people that are capable to work need to be able to work to pay their bills. Should be a minimum wage that they can afford to live and not have to rely on government subsidies. Because like Bill Cooper said, once you rely on the government to take care of you, now they got you. And some people, unfortunately, are, you know, for whatever reason, they're doing their best. They're working hard, but they don't make much money. I told a story many times about the one, not to sound like I'm this hero guy, but like one time I went to a shelter to serve lunch to the people that were in the homeless shelter. And long story short, I said, where's everybody at? Because we're supposed to be the families first and then the singles could come in. There was like one family and it was like 30 minutes of just standing there. I said, where's all these families at? Can we just feed the singles? And they said, no, they're at work. I said, they're at work? Living in the homeless shelter? Like, yeah. Because, like, that's how it is sometimes, right? Like, people fall on hard times. And, you know, sometimes politically people demonize poor people and people that are working hard, because they try to create the other. They play with these opposing polarities, right? They do that on purpose. Oh my God, you got all these criminals from other countries everywhere. We're like, God, we better kick all of them out, including the people that are working day jobs. I know a couple people, that when they worked illegally, they were here with a fake Social Security number and they paid taxes into the Medicare system and Social Security. They're never going to get that money back. They were contributing towards our system just so that they could make money. But if they're criminals, yeah, get them out of here. I'm fine with that. But if they're just working, they're at Home Depot trying to get some work done, I don't know, man. Like, there's bigger problems. But, yeah, the No Kings. Yeah, the whole protest thing is, it gets dicey pretty quick. Hawaii. Oh, beautiful Hawaii. What up? All right, let's see here. If there was even a laptop, the feds don't need it to physically access it. Isn't that what this is spying software is all about? Let's see. Yeah, same, Craig. I vote in libertarian. I vote in independent. I vote third parties. Remember Jill Stein? I like some of them wackadoodle people. I like Bernie Sanders. I like people that are like shake things up a little bit. All right, let's see. Okay, Rough Rider is in Morro Bay. It's quiet. All right. Kona. Oh, man, send me some of that coffee, Laker Hawaii. Come on. Donut's supposed to send me coffee. He never sent me coffee. I want that 100% Kona. Okay, John says he's seen tear gas and protests downtown. Nothing that crazy. Like, it's pretty much the same as always. All right, shout out. I know people love to just... I'm gonna use clean language on this show, okay? Just so you're forewarned. People always crap on L.A. I stand up for L.A. I love it there. Like, would I live there? I don't know. Like, it's a little too fast-paced for me. I'm a little too old. It's a little too expensive, maybe. But I think it's a beautiful place. I would live there if I had the opportunity or means that it was a potential place. I like it. I actually had a job there once. I was going to move there. I mean, but like every big city, there's problems in big cities. Like, there's a lot of people there, of course. Like, some of that homeless situations in L.A., boy, oy vey. You get that under control. That stuff's wild. Same with San Diego. Like, these are beautiful places, but, man, you guys got to clean up the homeless situation. Yeah, Richard, we're going to talk about Palantir and Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Oh, Lorraine, what up? Okay. Yeah, it does feel like a giant ritual. Is Josie on our side yet? Josie plays a great role of being my opposing polarity, all right? So she's on board with most of the things. Sometimes on the show, on Breaking Social Norms, she puts up a little bit of a battle, and it seems like she's kind of maybe at odds, but, you know. All right. Yeah, I'm going to get off this soapbox real quick. All right, here we go. All right, I got to go here. Jan, what up? Okay, all right, good. Okay, cool. All right, now, let's talk about what I've been working on. This is just going to be a fun little 10, 15 minutes. And then we're going to get on to the main content, all right? Now, this is a segment I call All About Me Corner. Because I think you, like I told you, I did, 3 or 4 hours of shows saying who I am, all right? Because I need you to know who I am, my influences, the information I'm consuming so that you can make an informed opinion about whether or not you want to believe me. Okay? Okay. So I've been watching some movies lately. I watched the Pee Wee Herman documentary. Loved it. My man, I grew up infatuated with Pee Wee Herman. I dressed up like him for Halloween. I got a photo somewhere of that. And it bummed me out when he got in trouble with the, playing bobbing and weaving on the bald-headed champ in the movie theater there. And then he had those allegations. I'm not going to say them on here, but he had those allegations, which was interesting because the documentary, which of course is a documentary, which those are highly charged sort of videos, but made it seem like he was actually pretty innocent in that because he had this huge collection of old nostalgia stuff, and that included Sorry, I can't look at the comments. I can't look at the comments and think. He had a huge collection of nostalgia stuff, which included like those old-timey bodybuilder dudes. And I guess there was one image of a male who was underage. It looked like he was like 17, if that was the image they presented on the documentary. Anyway, the point being is that it was a smear campaign, according to the documentary. I'm rolling with it, though. I'm Camp Pee-wee, so that's a real bummer, you know? He had to sort of go through that. But it just goes to show you the power of Hollywood. It taketh and it giveth. I watched Day of the Dead from the 80s. That was pretty cool, you know? I actually had never seen that, if you could believe it. I always liked the zombie movies, Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, the one in the shopping mall. But I hadn't seen Day of the Dead. And I put movie reviews on Letterboxd. What's my Letterboxd? I don't even know what it's called. If you look at my Letterboxd, I left reviews for all these movies that I'm talking about. And boy, are they hilarious reviews. Isaac Weishaupt, that's my profile. I think. I think. Yeah. Anyways, there was a guy named Steele. I don't know if you guys have seen Day of the Dead. There's a guy named Steele. Made me laugh. Then I saw Threesome. There's a few movies I watched because Josie, these are her childhood classics that I'm trying to catch up on just to, you know, strictly for vibes. I saw a movie called Threesome with the Baldwin dude, the crazy one, and Donna from Twin Peaks. Can you believe that? Let's see. What else did we saw? Just One of the Guys, which had Sherilyn Fenn from Twin Peaks, another 80s movie. Those are pretty good. And then just last night or the night before, I finished the movie Overboard. You guys seen Overboard with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn? What the hell was that? I've never seen the movie before. I'd heard of it a million times. They even redid it. But I watched the original. I said, what is this movie I'm watching? This is the most unhinged plot I've ever seen. The guy, if you don't know what the movie's about, this guy, Kurt Russell's a carpenter, and Goldie Hawn plays this sort of like rich elitist on a yacht, and she's a real jerk to him, you know, putting him in his place. And he's on the boat, and he's fixing some stuff, and she's being real snooty. She's like, well, you didn't fix it to my liking. And she doesn't pay him. Now he's mad. He's like, he's a poor dude. He needs that money to put food on the table for his four kids, whatever he's got. And Goldie Hawn's character ends up, she jumps off the boat or something. She ends up losing her memory and having amnesia. Doesn't know who she is. Her husband, who's the guy with the money, and he's a total creep. He's like, good, I don't like this chick either. So he heads out and leaves her at the hospital. And she doesn't know who she is. And Kurt Russell sees her on the news and he's like, oh, I got an idea. Why don't I go in there and lie to her and tell her I'm her husband? And he takes her to his house and lies to her and says, hey, yeah, these are your kids. And, you know, you're my wife and you're going to do the things you've always done. You cook, you clean, and we're going to knock boots in the bedroom. I said, what? What are we talking about, Kurt? Turns out these two have been married the whole time. I had no idea they were married. No clue. They make a good couple, to be fair. And the movie's just wacky. And then he wants to build a mini golf course. So he has five investors that he takes out to dinner. And then he builds this janky ass mini golf in his yard. And the mayor's there with the military honor guard for the big grand opening. I said, the movie is 30 minutes too long, by the way. It's 2 hours. I said, this silly ass plot. He basically MK'd Ultra her. That's right. Overboard was wild. It was a wild movie. I said, man, I'm go. She showed me some stuff that I couldn't believe I grew up in the 80s without watching. The like back in the day, I watched Valley Girl with Nick Cage. And it was one of my favorite movies of all time. I saw Dirty Dancing, blew my mind. That also one of my favorite movies of all time, which I know that's like some real chick stuff to say, but I was like, this is a great movie. A little inappropriate. Those 80s movies are so inappropriate. Okay, then I watched Under the Silver Lake, which I will be doing a show about someday. I let the Patreon folks vote on the next film analysis. Overwhelmingly, The Shining won. So I'm working on a Shining analysis. That's coming up here in a section where I tell you what I'm working on. Let's get through what else I've been watching. Couples Therapy on Paramount. Do that for Josie. She likes that kind of stuff. I hate it. I don't hate it. I just, you know, it's hard. Like, I don't like the therapy stuff. It's like, ugh. It's hard watching people go through stuff. You know what I mean? Then I watched a movie called Oddity. It was fine. I saw on TikTok someone said, oh, my God, scariest movie ever. No, it's not. It's fine. People on TikTok are so dramatic, you know? We finished Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, of course. Of course. Sleazy Utah reality show. Yeah, I'm in. Survivor, of course. Always watching Survivor. A little dabble into Twin Peaks, The Return. I was going to watch it all again, but I got caught up with other things. And what else? And stuff I got coming up, I'm going to watch Sinners. We're watching Love Island, too, by the way. If you want to talk Love Island. 28 years later, can't wait to watch that. Another zombie movie. A new Frankenstein's coming out. A show about Crystal Lake. Friday the 13th. Can't wait. Now, let's talk about work. What work am I working on? Well, I'm reading this big-ass book about the CCRU writings. You won't believe the things I'm finding in there. Wow, wowee. MK Ultra. Not even making that up. The Melancholy Android. I've got a few books going. I always have multiple books rolling around. I finished 1984. I'm working on a book club for that. Also, something I'm planning on doing a book club for. I think just going to be on the Patreon. Just depends. I am working on The Shining, so I'm reading The Shining. I just finished... Well, I read King Kill 33 twice, but I did that. Now, the projects... That I'm working on, stuff that's coming up. I'm also currently taking Professor Dana Basalka has an online course. I am taking that. It is called, let me shout her out. I mean, we love Diana Pasalka. The Original Awakeners. And she's going through Plato's Republic and how it affects various movies and such. 1984, Brave New World, and so on. Which is perfect because I said, perfect, I just finished 1984. So I'm working on the 1984 book club. I'm working on The Shining, which is going to be a super deep dive. Deeper, so deep, so much deeper than anyone's ever deep dived into The Shining. I'm going to put that room 237 to shame. To shame. I don't know if I'm going to be able to put Jay Widener to shame. He's the man. He did Kubrick's Odyssey 1, 2, 3. He paved the way, but I'm going to do my best. I'm working on the Substack series for Dark Enlightenment. I am going to write a book about Dark Enlightenment. I'm planning on having that out this fall. I'm also, when I'm done with that, I'm going to write the Twin Peaks book. I'm planning on having that out in my fantasy, February 2026, reality, spring, maybe summer. Oh, we almost got 500 people in the chat. Thank you. Like and subscribe, share, do the things, hit the buttons, play with yourself, whatever you got to do. Then further down the line, there's some other movies I plan on doing analysis for, but no time in the next near future. We're talking about Goonies for Cheryl, Legend with Tommy Salami, Fight Club. Just kind of depends on when I can squeeze those in. And I just got done with Coast to Coast, Sunday night, Monday morning. That was wild. There was some crazy stuff. Richard Cera was about to get gangster. He was getting gangster on some people. Oh, if you heard it, you know what I'm talking about. It was pretty good, though. And then the Twin Peaks. The Twin Peaks series. What do you call these things? Hang on. I got to find you know what I'm talking about. The Twin Peaks tour. Oh, DavidRoyWilliams.com. Go to DavidRoyWilliams.com. You'll see Twin Peaks Conversation with the Stars. They're going to be all over the country. Starting in August 4th. So be sure, August to October, be sure you're not going to miss out on all the big time Twin Peaksers. Okay. All right. Comments, then main content, then comments, then we're done. Oh, man, you guys have been dropping the comments. Here we go. First movie we ever rented with our new VHS player. Hell yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Those are the good times. Life was so much simpler when your whole deal was just renting a VHS player. You rent the Nintendo. Like, this is what we're doing this weekend. This is it. We're watching movies. We're playing the Nintendo. So lots of votes for Overboard. Captain Ron Isaac. What is that? Oh, I'm going to have to look that up. Seems like people are into it. Captain Ron. Oh, it's Kurt Russell. All right. Dude, Kurt Russell is great. I mean, he's goated for sure. I wish 80s Kurt Russell would MK Ultra me. That's great. Jan says, I really think you will have no problem mentioning Twin Peaks in every episode. Absolutely right. In fact, when I do my King Kill 33, half of it's Twin Peaks talk. Just kidding. It's maybe like a third of it. No, maybe like an eighth of it. But it comes up a lot, right? Oh, the shirt is always, it's always sleeveless. And I started to do a thing where when I interview guests or if I show up on someone's show, I'll respectfully put on sleeves. But if it's just me and my people, no sleeves, no problem. I did see Color Out of Space with Nick Cage. In fact, I think I did a show about it back when it came out. I think it was pre-pandemic, if I'm not mistaken, which was a whole different world for me, as most of you understand. All right, Craig with a solid 80s list. Shining, Predator, and The Running Man. Solid. You'll see no complaints from me on that list. The Shining is from the 70s. No, wait. Is The Shining 81? I think Shining is 81. Okay. 80s movies had random boobs. You know what? I agree, Lorraine. I agree. Where's the random boobs? I think Overboard had tons of sexual stuff inappropriately just shoved in, and I was like, were they trying to make sure they didn't hit the PG-13 on this? Like, what's the deal? But you know, that's the environment a lot of us grew up in, so we're all kind of pigs if you grew up through those 80s. Yeah, Hallie, the Dinosaur Salt class is dope. It's dope. She's doing a couple more too. Like, this isn't the last one, so stay tuned to her socials. She promotes them and all that. Okay. Would love to hear that on Plato. You know, Plato's Republic, like, that's more like Jay Dyer speed. I've never read it. I obviously know what Allegory of the Cave is where that comes from. And she's explaining it, and I'm a little confused about it still, right? Shout out 500 people in the chat. Love you guys. Thank you. Hit the bell. Hit the like. Play with yourself. Do the things. Tweak your nips. Nurse Kid, have you done anything on Eyes Wide Shut? Have I done anything on Eyes Wide Shut? Are you crazy? Are you a crazy person right now? That's all I talk about is Eyes Wide Shut. Well, Twin Peaks, you know. Yeah, in all seriousness, I'm just being a jerk. I wrote about it in Kubrick's Code in 2013, I think. And then I did like a 6 or 7 part deep dive starting in 2020, I believe. So if you go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, I assume you're on the free feed status. If you go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, go to the index of all episodes, you'll see links for it kind of throughout. You can just do a Control F search, look for Eyes Wide Shut. You'll see more Eyes Wide Shut than you've ever wanted in your whole life. So thank you, though. I've deep dived into it hardcore. In fact, it's going to come up. I'm also working on a Sabrina Carpenter show. That one's going to be fun. Her new video, she's all caked up. And I said, what is this girl's deal, man? You know, on her album, she's got weird, like, dog collars. And she's got some dude grabbing her by the hair. She's on her knees. I said, bro, what? I mean, I'm not complaining, but what is going on with this chick? So I started getting into it. And there's some Eyes Wide Shut stuff. There's some Rosemary's Baby. There's all kinds of crazy stuff going on there. So look out for that. That one's going to be a red hot banger sooner than later. Why am I standing? You know, I stand most of the day. My hip flexors hurt when I sit too much. Getting old, 45. But I did complete DT in record time for me yesterday on at the CrossFit. 12 minutes and 7 seconds, if you wondered. RX weight, 155. You guys are okay. You're like, okay, Twin Peaks, CrossFit, sounds good. Nobody cares. 6 in the chat just listening. Oh, okay. Well, there's 5. I don't. I see a thing with the eyeballs. It says 526 people. I don't know what that means. All right. It is serious when the glasses come off. FFL status. Oh, okay. All right. Cool. All right. Before you went into the Twin Peaks fever dream, you were deep into Cooper. Yes. The two are, you know, that's the world I'm living in, man. I love it, dude. I love that dream fever world. That's why I got Twin Peaks and Kubrick tattoos all over me. I love it. Yeah, the Fight Club thing's dope. Can't wait for that. That's a Substack interview with Isaac and Eyeswedge. Okay. All right. Okay. Mark caught up. Here we go. Okay. Lorraine, who said that? Okay. All right. Now, let's talk Palantir. Let's bring the mood down a little bit, all right? Because I know not everyone likes this stuff. And I promise you, I'm not trying to be political. This isn't my field of expertise. Well, I don't know if expertise is the right term. It's not the field that I want because it's so divisive. And it is a distraction in a way sometimes. I just feel like a lot of people get sort of distracted with this. And I don't want to be one of those people that gets distracted with it. But as part of the Dark Enlightenment series and being a conspiracy guy myself, how can we not talk about this? How can we not talk about the thing that every truther since the beginning of time has been warning us about? Okay? So, I brought some images. Oh, boy. I've been showing you the same image this whole time. Let me... It's going to take me a second. I got to... Okay. Oh, jeez. This is taking me a minute here. Hang on. Oh, boy. Well, this didn't work out now, did it? Okay, well, anyway, we're talking about Palantir. Talking about Palantir, this is a company co-founded by Peter Thiel, Alex Karp, and, you know, some others. We've got, and of course, Peter Thiel, a big component of the Dark Enlightenment. As if you don't know what I'm talking about, please listen to Dark Enlightenment 1 through 5. And they started this in 2003 as a post 9/11 surveillance organization to prevent terrorist attacks by aggregating data from intelligence agencies, you know, your CIAs, your NSAs, your FBI. Because if you remember back in post 9/11 days, there was all this back and forth about using the Patriot Act to collate data and fusion centers, and they created the Bumble Hive in Utah, this giant database to store every email ever written and phone call and text messages and all that stuff, right? Now, Palantir just happened to get in on the ground floor, and they were funded by the CIA's venture capital arm called InQtel. Okay. Now, all of this fits into the Dark Enlightenment. Hold on. Man, I'm having a hard time with this image thing. I'm trying to make this a smooth operation for you guys here. It fits into the Dark Enlightenment because it is the infrastructure used to implement the techno-authoritarian surveillance state solution because they want to overthrow democracy for reasons I described and discussed in Dark Enlightenment 1 through 5. Because they don't believe in it. They think it's terrible. They think that the people are mouth breathers and they don't deserve to know, which echoes the exact sentiment that the occultist, like Albert Pike, talked about in Morals and Dogma, the statement I read at the beginning of this show, right? We don't deserve to know. Aleister Crowley said, the slave shall serve. Like, there is this idea. They call us the parasite class, all right? So Palantir is part of this quote-unquote solution to centralize the authoritarian surveillance state. And this will lead to various things like predictive modeling through artificial intelligence, which is very much like Minority Report with the precogs, right? Those entities that could predict the future, and then, you know, next thing you know, boom, Tom Cruise is showing up and he's busting down the door and you're done. You know, once Tommy Salami gets in there, it's a wrap. Now, the name Palantir, it comes from Lord of the Rings, referring to the Palantiri crystal spheres. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but the Palantiri crystal spheres in J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings is where this idea comes from. It's the exact name. And they were used in the story, from what I'm told. I've never read it. Not much of a fantasy guy myself. They were used for remote viewing. But the problem in the story is that it gets into the wrong hands of Sauron, and they become tools of manipulation. And Sauron uses it to distort reality and to manipulate people. All right? So the surveillance was used. Hold on, See, now this is not a very smooth operation here. I got to get the images up on the screen. This is why I do this editing with the look, if you watch my video version, which I put on, if you're a tier 2 supporter on Patreon or VIP section, you get the video version ad free, all that stuff. And I started adding images and video clips to these videos to try to spice them up a little bit instead of me just talking to you, right? Now, what I'm trying to toy with is I've got these free feed, these video free feed things. I'm rebuilding YouTube because they, we've had our situations in the past. I've got a Rumble, and also on Spotify, they're letting me upload videos for now. So I'm putting these images on the videos, and the last time I did a live, I couldn't put the images up when I was talking. This time, I sort of pre-positioned and loaded them up so that hopefully this would be a smooth thing, and you get to see the images while I'm talking. Ugh. Okay. So in the story Lord of the Rings, the surveillance is used for nefarious purpose, like a warning. And they are false prophets in a way, because Sauron uses them to only show part of what's going on, because he doesn't want you to know the full context, because he's being deceptive, right? The grand deceiver. And that's kind of like surveillance data. It's just data, right? But it doesn't always paint the full context. There was a good joke by Patrice O'Neill that he had years ago, obviously before he died. And something about his idea that something about the cell phone having the GPS location of a place where a woman got murdered or something like that. But he's not wrong about that. Like, that's where this is headed, right? That's why it's dangerous. That's why we can't let this kind of thing happen. So in the Lord of the Rings, the Palantiri stones can also look back at you, all right? As this image will show you, yes, the all-seeing eye of Sauron in Lord of the Rings. And this is a bit of the hermetic principles of as above, so below, meaning that if your intentions are bad, then that's all you'll see, right? And this is kind of how propaganda works. If they want to tell you and convince you that everybody around you is a bunch of criminals, MS-13, and Satan's everywhere, you know, like I'm guilty of this too. Like I tell you, oh my God, Satan's everywhere, right? Now everything you look at is satanic. So that's why I did all these shows where I explained who I am, because I need you to understand that so that you can determine maybe his bias and worldviews are out of whack. Maybe he's a little crazy, which would be a fair assessment, but I provide this service of looking at the world through this lens. And if it fits, great. If it doesn't, then just say, okay, I don't buy that. And that's okay. We don't have to agree. So what's interesting is that in the mythology of Lord of the Rings, the Palantiri were created by the elves of Valinor and Curtis Yarvin, one of the architects of the Dark Enlightenment that we talked about in part one. He calls his followers Dark Elves, and he bases that off Lord of the Rings. Peter Thiel, also obsessed with Lord of the Rings. What's going on here? Well, what's going on here is that they are nerds, all right? Now, what's also interesting is that the Lord of the Rings is another name for Saturn, which is the final initiation for mankind. This is the theme we talked about, how Elon Musk changed his logo of Grok to Saturn. In the occult, Saturn represents the adversarial force, the outer limits. And whenever an initiate needs to cross the abyss and destroy the ego, they must confront Saturn. That is why the great Dale Cooper in the Red Room has the little figure of Saturn, because that's the final test, right? If they can overcome Saturn, it's like approaching the abyss to become a master of the temple in Aleister Crowley language, right? Sorry about the ice clanking. What am I going to drink? Warm. What am I going to drink? Warm drink? Warm drink. I'm drinking water with electrolytes, all right? But I'm not going to drink warm drink just because you guys don't want to hear the ice clank. I'm just joking. Some of you guys like the ice clank. Okay, so the software, let's talk about the software that Palantir uses. Because if you can believe it, it's even more sort of symbolism into that. The first one, the main one, is called Gotham. And the law enforcement agencies and the intelligence agencies, they use this Gotham to comb through emails and its surveillance, I don't know, data points as a form of data fusion to predict behavior, right? And if you recall, post 9/11, I don't know how old you guys were. I was doing a short tour in South Korea for our beloved military, and I was 21 when 9/11 happened, all right? So I didn't really pay attention to anything back then. Then I got out in 2003, and then I remember watching Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, and that's when things started opening up for me. And then I took a course in college on politics, and that's when I started paying attention to stuff. And there was all this talk about fusion centers where they would take all of our data, and all the intelligence agencies would be able to share the data at these fusion centers, all right? And it was a whole big thing because there was a big stink about whatever, all right? And this was all part of the Patriot Act fallout. The Patriot Act used to be this very controversial thing, and even Obama, when he got in, I believe he was running on the idea of sort of like dismantling it, but then he never did. So, you know, there's lots of elements where both sides will continue to sort of push these invasions of privacy. And it's always in the name of safety. They're like, well, what do you want? Do you want the, I don't want to say the words on YouTube, do you want the bad guys on the planes with you, or do you want us to dig through your emails? And there's all these stories about them abusing it and digging into like their girlfriend's emails and phone calls. Like, it's crazy. So anyway, this one, this software, Gotham, is the closest to the Minority Report stuff, right? It's even nicknamed the Minority Report for real life, all right? So this is kind of the one that's used the most. Now, if you recall in the movie Batman Dark Knight, where obviously the term Gotham comes from Batman, in the movie, there's this plot where, what's his name? Lucius Fox, Morgan Freeman's character. He figures out how to do mass surveillance on the whole city by activating people's cell phones and, I don't know, their electronics to see what they're looking at, where they are, because they're trying to catch the bad guys. And Batman, he reluctantly uses it, but he's like, we got to shut this down, because there's this whole conversation about how unethical this is and how dangerous it is, okay? So ironically, in the movie, they showed us this. So is it a reference to the Batman movie? Then you've got, they've got other softwares, because Palantir was using Gotham and another one called Falcon to provide ICE data to track and do surveillance on undocumented people, do workplace raids, family separation, all kinds of crazy stuff, right? So they've been using this for a minute. And strangely enough, from 2011 to 2019, Palantir was also using Gotham for a thing called Operation Laser. This is the Los Angeles Strategic Extraction and Restoration Program. That's 8 years they've been doing this, using data analytics to make predictions on which citizens would become chronic offenders so the LAPD could target them for surveillance. Interesting that Los Angeles would be a place for the police state rollout, right? And you're seeing all this weird stuff with the protest focus right now. And then you've also got the software called Foundry. This is where they mix data with AI analytics for commercial and government use. This is a reference to the foundry where you melt metals down. You purify them, cast them into something new. This is a literal form of alchemy, right? And for Palantir to use this is to melt down the digital data, things that represent you, and create a new reality from it. That is to create the new world order. That takes us to the latest controversy, and this is the government using Palantir to create a national database, which I can show you when I load up my image what we're talking about. Oh, it won't let me. Okay. All right, folks. All right, listen up, folks. I got to remove a bunch of images. Like I said, I'm still learning the live, so you're going to have to bear with me. Some of this is a little painful for you guys, I understand. But it's going to be so worth it when I show you these images. It's not letting me do more than 10, it says. Okay. Got it, buddy. So, this isn't the right image, bro. You know what I should do is I should load them up. Here we go. This is the right one. I should load these images beforehand. Okay, next time it's going to be smoother. I'm going to load them all up, and then I'm going to just kind of click them. Got it now. Okay, and you can read about this national database from a New York Times article on May 30th called Trump Taps Palantir to Compile Data on Americans. Now, fun fact, most websites that are behind a paywall like this, you can find them on archive.org. That's where I found the whole article. You just take the URL and you copy and paste it into archive.org, where the URL Wayback Machine is, and boom, you can find it. Now, is that supporting journalism? No, that's a terrible idea. We should support journalism, but hey, times is tough sometimes. So what happened was this started back in March, when the president signed an executive order calling for the federal government to share data across all agencies. And back then, even people said, well, gee, is he going to compile a master list of information to do surveillance on Americans? But nothing was really discussed about what this executive order meant. And what they were trying to do, because it talks about stovepiping, and it basically means that they want to centralize all intelligence and data points and surveillance to consolidate everything together. And that was allegedly part of DOGE's mission, to access all these government systems, to access all the data, and then centralize it for Palantir, allegedly. Now, if you look at the stock price of Palantir, and you look at all the contracts, they've been getting hundreds of millions of dollars in contracts. In fact, let me pull up the little image here, and I'll show you exactly what I'm talking about. That's a screenshot I took of the stock performance of Palantir Technologies since the election. November 1st, share prices were $41. They were actually doing pretty good. Today, $135, well, yesterday, $135. It's about a 350% increase since the election. Isn't that interesting? They've been given hundreds of millions of dollars of contracts. Recently, there was a $795 million contract awarded in May. Yeah, in May. Now, the claim is that the executive authority is being used to get Palantir to launch the mass surveillance initiative. And they've been in contact with, through DOGE, they've been in contact with Social Security and the IRS. And this is all from the New York Times article. According to six government officials and Palantir employees, they've been doing this. And they put their Foundry software into the Department of Homeland Security and HHS. So merging all this data to create this master list of information isn't far off, right? Like, it's kind of already there because the executive order was calling for this to happen. So now the argument is that they can create detailed credit reports or predictive behavior analysis of every American. All right. Now, ironically, the month prior, in April, the New York Times had also reported on this, which, again, I retrieved through the archive.org. And the article was warning us about this exact thing happening, on how there's all this data the government has access to about you. And they're all sort of in various components. And the issue is, and we're going to talk about the Privacy Act here in a minute, but the issue is that all it takes is for someone to compile all these data points about you. Imagine if they could crawl the internet and every government system that you've ever, you know, your health records, everything, and they compile all that into one area. Someone's got a master list on everything about you. Every disease you've got, every credit thing you've had, every purchase you've ever made. They could predict your behavior pretty well. I mean, TikTok does a great job of this. And who knows what access they have. It's not this much access. They just have access to your phone. To what? I don't know. The government's been squirrely about that. They're like, oh, we got to ban it. Okay, why? Well, we can't tell you. It's just dangerous. Oh, okay. I mean, I believe it. I believe all these apps and stuff we do on our cell phones are dangerous on some levels. And on that New York Times article, they talk about the actual data points that Doge has sought access to. And my understanding, the implication here is that this is the data that is going to be compiled by Palantir and assessed to make determinations about your behavior. That's my assessment of it. I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but you know, that's how I look at it. So let's talk about what's on the data list. Well, wait till you see this. It's hundreds of data points. Some examples: adjusted gross income, the amount of federal taxes owed, medical notes, passwords, mortgage interest paid. What else? Mother's maiden name, biometric identifiers, birth certificates, numbers of family members in college, personal bank account numbers, psychiatric records, family size, sex, gender, HIV and AIDS tests, and you know, literally hundreds of metrics. I could read them for you right off of the New York Times article. Let's just go down a list of some of them. Academic rank, active duty military status, addiction treatment records, adjusted gross income, adopted child's gender, adopted child name, adopted child placement agency, adoption credit claimed, adoption taxpayer ID number, adoptive parent name, adoptive placement agency, adverse credit history, alimony paid, alimony received, amount of federal taxes owed, amount of federal taxes refunded, amount of institutionally provided financing owed, amount of Medicare conditional payment, amount of student loan debt, area of medical residency, area of study, auto insurance effective date of coverage, auto insurance policy number. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And the funny part is, I mean, I don't know how funny it is. If you're watching the video right now, check this out. I got that list I threw up there, that's only the first page of the list. It's got multiple pages. And get this, that's the second page of data points. How about a third page of data points? And guess what? We're not done yet. How about a fourth page of data points? And that's not all. How about a fifth page of data points? If you can't see the video version of this, I'm not exaggerating. This is all the data. This is all your data. All of it. And it's protected by the Privacy Act of 1974. You should be outraged by this. I am. Okay, so if we go to an article from Wired Magazine, or I don't know. Is that a magazine anymore? The Wired website, April 18th. Again, accessible on archive.org. Your friend, my friend, archive.org. And it talked about how sources at the DHS had told Wired that Doge is cross-referencing voter data with a bunch of metrics. All those metrics I had been going through, presumably, which is of high concern to me, because I think our data and privacy is, I'm with the Privacy Act stance on this, which we'll get into. Did we get into that already? Yeah, we're getting into that next, so hang on. A senior DHS official tells Wired they are trying to amass a huge amount of data. It has nothing to do with finding fraud or wasteful spending. They are already cross-referencing immigration with Social Security and IRS, as well as voter data. And the article talks about the cozy relationship between all these people involved. Of course, Doge, Peter Thiel, Palantir, all the familiar usual suspects. They revealed that at least three Doge members had worked for Palantir. Two other had worked at other companies founded by Peter Thiel. But there's a bunch of current and former Palantir employees who weren't cool with any of this, and they were worried that Palantir would become the face of Trump's political agenda, kind of like how Elon Musk became the face of, you know, all the things that Doge was doing. And they were saying about how this is going to be even worse if this massive database, this massive surveillance database gets hacked, which obviously that'll happen because every data system on the planet gets hacked. And 13 Palantir employees had signed a letter urging Palantir to cease this potential mass surveillance program. There's a former Palantir engineer named Miss Linda Exia. Exia? I don't know how you say her name. Data that is collected for one reason should not be repurposed for other uses. Combining all that data, even with the noblest of intentions, significantly increases the risk of misuse, which is the concern here, right? Now, to defend the rationale between what they're claiming they're going to do with this, they are claiming that they need to collect all this data and run it through a big, presumably AI database, Palantir Gotham Foundry system, a surveillance program, because they're trying to, you know, again, it's always the safety in exchange for your privacy. This is saving you money in exchange for your privacy, which I don't, I remember I was ranting Raven on the live. I don't know. So if I already said this point yesterday, my apologies, but the Elon Musk Doge operation, he promised he was going to save us American taxpayers $2 trillion by going through and doing all the things Doge was doing. And in reality, they saved $200 billion, which turned out to be an excessive number also. So it turned out it was less than $100 billion. I'm roughly paraphrasing the numbers, but that's what we're talking about. Many orders of magnitude under what they claimed they could find. Because the people pushing this are very much adamant on trying to tell you that, hey, your taxes are all being spent on fraud, waste, and abuse. So that it makes you angry because those are our tax dollars. We work hard for our money, right? And we expect results out of that. So Elon and company were telling you that it's all going out the window to fraud, waste, and abuse. And this is the same. I mean, it's the same thing over and over. The culture wars going back to the 80s. Ronald Reagan with his fake news about the welfare queen. You know, anyway, without getting on a soapbox, that's what we're seeing again. And this time it's, hey, we're going to do mass surveillance like China, but we're going to save you all this money, right? And the CEO from Gumroad, Salil Lavinia, I don't know how you pronounce his name. Again, my apologies if I told the story already. My brain can't, I don't know where my rant went and got cut off. But he's the CEO of Gumroad, which is the website I use to sell my books and shirts. Great product, love it. He was living in Utah for a period, and he held this dinner with top clients that sold the most on Gumroad, and I actually made that list. Thank you for purchasing your signed books and T-shirts from me. And I got to meet him. Very nice guy. And he's been doing interviews. I don't know if you've seen this. He's been doing interviews talking about, turned out he was working for Doge. And his side of the story is he was attempting to try to make the VA system more efficient for veterans going through the medical system, which, great. I love that. If that's the entire truth, right? And again, I got no beef with the guy. I think he was a really nice dude. I got to meet him and such. But the story that he revealed was that he said, we were supposed to find all this sort of fraud, waste, and abuse, and there was none found at all. He said, you're just dealing with old software systems and a web of various programs that can't communicate with each other. Like, this is a pretty complex fix. And I'm paraphrasing, but he was under the assumption that they were going to get in there and find all this sort of like fraud, wasteful overuse of software or whatever. And he said it was nothing like that. There was no fraud. So my point is, they're lying to you. They're lying to you. And wake up if you're one of those people that still thinks that they're going to save us with their surveillance system. I got bad news for you. And the problem is that there are actually privacy laws on the book. It goes back to the 1974 Privacy Act. That the law says that when we give our data to the government, they can only use it for narrow purposes and it must be secured. again, going to that New York Times April article, it says privacy advocates say that all this data could enable the government to punish its political opponents by weaponizing information about an individual's personal life, bankruptcies, criminal histories, medical claims, or halting the benefits they receive, housing vouchers, retirement checks, food assistance. So that's why I'm talking about that, connecting it to the Wired article where they said that they're trying to bump this data up against voter registrations. Because they want to know who you vote for. Are you a loyalist? They have not demonstrated a single case in which fraud detection has required some universal government access to everyone's data, said Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat of Maryland. In fact, the creation of a monster uniform database of all information on all citizens will be an invitation to fraud and political retaliation against the people. That is how personal data is tracked and used in authoritarian states. Both Russia and China stockpile data on their citizens to track opponents and squash dissent of the ruling party in government. Now, even if you were like, hey, I think there's still good reason that the government should build database profiles on us and track us and who we vote for and all that stuff, the irony is that we already decided that saving money by making things more efficient is less important than privacy. We've already decided that, and I concur with that too. And this comes by Julian Sanchez, a libertarian privacy scholar. He says, with the passage of the 1974 Privacy Act, Americans chose privacy over efficiency. We made a very conscious choice to say we're accepting the cost of inefficiencies because if a unified database came into the hands of someone who wanted to put state power to some repressive purpose, their task would be made too easy by that centralization. At times, he said, libertarians have been called paranoid for suggesting such a scenario was still realistic in America in the 21st century. I think it's very evident now it is. And all of this echoes the dreaded Chinese social credit score system that we, the truther community, used to always warn about and say, oh my God, this is going to happen. They're going to track all of us. But now it's like, fine, I guess. I could have fooled me. And the Chinese social credit score system, they use data, consolidated surveillance, to determine their citizens' reliability. Because what their system does is it monitors the individual's behavior, and it compiles data from these surveillance tools, and it assigns them a score based on trustworthiness. And it looks at data from their financial history, police records, their online behavior. That's the big one. Social media posts, online purchases. Because you see there's this push towards using identification to get on the internet, right? I live in Utah, which is a nanny state. I know people pretend it's not, but it is. And they already cracked that door open by making it so that you can't get on the pornography websites without an ID. The pornography websites, even they were like, hey, like, this isn't cool. We don't want people's data on here, so they won't even allow it. They said, we're just not doing it. So same thing, right? They want to monitor all your data, so they want you to have an ID to get on the internet. That's one of my beefs with the blue check marks on Instagram. It was that way with Twitter, but then they changed it and said you don't have to have the ID to have the lower form of verified account. But on Instagram, for me to get the blue check mark, I got to upload my ID and all that, and I'm like, not really interested, thanks. Because this is what it's all going to be. It's going to be more data points to track. And this includes surveillance cameras. We're talking about Chinese social credit scores. They have surveillance cameras everywhere. And if you're jaywalking or smoking in a non-smoking area, you lose points on your trustworthiness. And the penalties for not having a high enough Chinese social credit score includes travel bans, business restrictions. They can even throttle your internet speed. And the main difference between the Chinese system and the American credit score system includes that component of surveillance. That's the big one. So when you see, if you ever see those TikToks or videos of people in China and they show you the town square and there's just tons of cameras up and down the square on these poles, it's very much like the facial recognition system and the concept laid out in 1984 with the telescreens, always watching, right? Big Brother is always watching. And kind of like how we discussed with the Privacy Act for America, we do provide data to the U.S. credit score system. So it kind of is here, right? But there's nuance here. First off, there's no surveillance. Second off, the data we provide to the U.S. credit score is very narrow in scope. It's specifically your financial reliabilities, and that is it, right? Whereas China is more generalized and overreaching, which if you looked at all those data points I was showing you, the hundreds and hundreds of data points they want to compile, that's generalized and overreaching. That's exactly the same thing. And also the government, so the U.S. credit score, the information and data, just the limited scope financial data history, isn't held by the government at all. It's held by private companies. So it's completely different, these private credit bureaus. Whereas in the Chinese system, the government holds the data, which, again, that's going to be the deal. The government has Palantir compile this data to provide it to the government. So that's the similarities and differences, right? And, of course, adding the surveillance component and the online behavior is a huge factor. Now, they asked the White House about this whole system, and they said, how are you going to safeguard this data? What are you going to use this data for that Palantir is going to compile? And they declined to address it. So, to me, it seems like that Privacy Act might be the last line of defense. Here's hoping. Then you've got the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, H.R. 1, which this gets into AI, which is a component of this, right? If this bill passes as it sits right now, it has a 10-year moratorium on state and local regulations on AI. And what that means is the federal government will have all the power over AI. Your local and state governments will have no say in it whatsoever. So, and this is probably using an extreme example, maybe it's not that extreme. If the federal government wants surveillance cameras in every traffic light in your little town, and maybe your state or local government has already passed laws saying there's going to be no surveillance cameras in this town at all, that's all gone. The federal government has the power to overstep that boundary now, and you're going to have the AI surveillance cameras. Because there's actually hundreds of state-level AI legislations currently on the books, so if this passes in the way it sits, all of those are gone. Fun fact, the HR 1 bill is based off of a report numbered 119-106. So it's already coded with the symbolism of 9/11, which, again, going back to the history of this, 9/11 is what gave us the Patriot Act and the PRISM program from the NSA. That was the first sort of time that we really went for this invasion of privacy. And again, safety in exchange for freedom. We're like, oh, you know, you can't have the bad people doing bad things, so we need to read your emails. And of course, this we remember back in, what was it, September of 21, I did a 5-part series on 9/11. There was the occult symbolism of 9 to 11, right? Because it represents the surpassing the number of completion, number 10, going to the number of magic, 11. And in William Westcott's Free Masonic book, he talks about 10 being the number of perfection. In the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, 10 is the number of Sephiroth that God used to create our world. Whereas 11 is considered, by Kenneth Grant, the cursed number outside of the system. It's the number of magic or illumination, man becoming God. And that's what this is all about. It's all about these nerds becoming gods, creating a digital matrix for us to be trapped in. And that's part of the reason why 9/11 was such a big ritualistic event. We went from the Twin Towers, the Twin Pillars, Boaz and Yakin, or in terms of the Kabbalah Twin Pillars, it's the Pillars of Strength and Wisdom becoming the Pillar of Consciousness, or the Pillar of Wisdom up the center. it's again the idea of these opposing forces of masculine and feminine coming together as one. The, as Kenneth Grant would call it, the formula for the great work, or abrahadabra. And it also centralizes the we're going back to the H.R. 1 bill and this AI moratorium. This would effectively centralize control of the most powerful technology the human race has ever created with no checks and balances. And this is happening at a critical time in the evolution of AI. It's becoming more and more integrated in our lives. In fact, if you moratoriumed it for 10 years, that takes us to dang near 2036. And we're almost in the singularity at that point. And it's a wrap. 10 years is plenty of time for it to become a real issue. And the federal government could implement AI systems for this massive surveillance system for Palantir. Facial recognition, surveillance cameras, predictive policing, which, like we talked about, Palantir was already doing this in LA with Operation Laser. This is very much like the precogs of Minority Report. Right, these entities that could predict if you were going to commit the crime, so Tommy Salami would come mess you up. So the AI with the Palantir social credit system and the federal government are going to determine if you are a threat to the system. So in conclusion, if we combine these ideas of the Dark Enlightenment into all of the stuff we've talked about today, we could argue that the federal government would effectively be handing the reins of power over to the Silicon Valley tech elites, where they will create the surveillance state, the freedom cities, and they can use all this surveillance with zero pushback, zero checks and balances. It's the ultimate in control and power. And it appears to be the rollout of the occult plans of the Great Reset, brought to you by the World Economic Forum. Alex Karp and Palantir have been presenting at the World Economic Forum. This is the platonic empire of the technocratic authoritarian state. Technology surveillance on one level, occult practices on another of making contact with entities. And it's basically the New World Order brought to you by the nerds. And they were inspired by science fiction, and they had this lust for power because they've been bullied and picked on their whole lives. So now it's time for them to get their getbacks. And it's time for you to start acting right, because Big Brother is going to be watching all of your movements with the classic exchange of supposed safety for your freedom. A tale as old as time. They manufacture boogeymen that don't exist to scare you. That's why they want to roll out AI at hyperspeed. They're like, well, what, you going to let China outdo us? And maybe, I mean, I'm not privy to that level of insider information. I know that that's what they're telling us. Like, well, AI is going full speed ahead. And maybe they are. But then they tell us, like, that's why we need to be a little reckless with it. Because, what, they're going to beat us to it. And, you know, this is all PSYOP. I think it's all PSYOP going all the way back to Q. And it's still rolling out. It's still rolling out. My red pill daddy, Bill Cooper, rolling over in his grave right now. When are you people going to wake up? And that's it. That's the Dark Enlightenment 6. Now, at this point, I read through all the comments on the live streams, which obviously I can't replicate now. But stay subscribed to the show, all right? I've got another episode about Dark Enlightenment stuff with guest Courtney Taylor, and we're going to hear about her views of the technocracy, the Hegelian left and right dialectics, and so much more. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm working on some crazy good shows for you guys. I've got a Shining deep dive I'm working through, the bonus show for June and or July, or maybe I'll do two bonus shows in July, I don't know. Is a what looks to be a three-part series on a book club on King Kill 33 by James Shelby Downer, a foundational document in the world of conspiracy that I don't know if anyone's really done a deep dive into it, but I'm gonna do it. So I'm working on those, and I'm also working on a fun Sabrina Carpenter analysis. That one's gonna be a good time too. So stay subscribed to the show. If you like it, you know what to do. Drop that 5-star on the Spotify app or the Apple app or whatever app you're listening to. If you're on Patreon, don't even sweat it. You're already helping out. which takes me to how you can support the show part two. If you really love the show, go ad-free, unlock all the bonus content like this massive King Kill 33 book club we're going to do. Then we're going to talk about 1984 book club in the next series. And you can support on one of the supporter feeds. You know where to go. You know what to do. Links are always in the show notes. Till next time, stay positive.